Bhagavad Gita. Your Wednesday class is consecutively going through Bhagavad Gita, I understand. So we'll follow. Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, text number 17. If you need a book, there's books. If you need your handheld device, get it out. We're going to chant the verse together. 18:17. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yashanan kato bhavo. Bodhir yasya nalipyate. Tadvapi sa ima lokan. Na hanti na nibadyate. Yasya na hankato bhavo. Buddhir yasya na lipyate. Advapi sa ima lokan. Na hanti na nibadyate. Yasya. One whose. Na. Never.
Never.
Ahankritaha.
Of false ego.
Bhavaha.
Nature.
Buddhihi.
Intelligence.
Yasya.
One whose.
Na.
Never.
Lipyate.
Is attached.
Hatva,
killing.
Api,
even.
Saha,
he.
Iman,
this.
Lokan,
world.
Na,
never.
Hanti,
kills.
Na,
never.
Nibhajyate,
becomes entangled.
Translation, one who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills man in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions, purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself as the worker, and the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness or lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the super soul or the supreme personality of Godhead, even though killing does not kill, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged. by a court of law. The 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is considered like a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita, second time through. Somewhat similar to what the second chapter is many topics, but summarizing the whole message of Bhagavad Gita. There's parts of emphasis for sure. Also, but summary. And just previous to this, text 17, there's a series of verses where the five factors of action are mentioned. Not exactly causes of action, but elements that must be there for action to take place. And they're mentioned here in the purport. So when all of those things are in alignment and action takes place, question, is that entanglement in fruitive activity or not? Because on the one hand, not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So what to speak of blades of grass, anything that anybody does? Why would there be karma if there's no, if five factors or action are working and ultimately the Supreme Lord is sanctioning? Where does karma come in? How is there implication? So after, that's what this verse is discussing. So after those five factors of action are described, there's attachment and detachment. Right and wrong action. Even for right action, there's bondage. For wrong action, there's bondage. If one thinks oneself the only doer, there's a very important principle. If one doesn't know Bhagavad Gita, if one doesn't consider the ultimate sanction of the Supreme Lord, and act according to his indication, most of our life we're doing something that's in direction of that which is approved by Krishna. However, most of the time we're acting through false ego also. And this false ego sense is karta aham. Karta, that's one of the five factors of action. Karta. Adishtam, the place of action. Karta, the worker. Karanam, the instruments or senses. Pratakvidham, different kinds of endeavor. Cheshta. Vividhascha pratak cheshta. Daivim, that's Krishna, super soul. So if we don't act in Krishna consciousness, if we're acting through false ego, then mindfulness of Krishna gets pretty thin. Maybe just gets obscured. maybe is there in word only, but not in consciousness. So what's being spoken of here is the conclusion, the goal, the stage of perfection, where one doesn't act in false ego. What, if one doesn't act in false ego, what does one act in? One acts in the spiritual conception of life. Who am I? Who is God? And I am his servant. And then comes the next part. So in this verse 17, there's two nas. One who does not work with the motivation of false ego, and one who whose intelligence is not lipyate, attached. So now we're going back to chapter 2, summarized again in chapter 18. Chapter 2 speaks of Buddha Yoga. After speaking of Sankhya Yoga, chapter 2 speaks of Buddha Yoga. So that could be a big discussion. Try to make a big discussion short. What's the relationship between Buddha Yoga and Bhakti Yoga? Or what's the relationship between Buddha and Bhakti? Many times, Prabhupada uses those terms interchangeably. Buddha Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. And when he does, it's with the understanding that without buddhi, you really can't have complete bhakti. And when you have complete bhakti, your buddhi is fully operative. Now, buddhi in a general sense means intelligence. Intelligence is the factor of discrimination. Discrimination in the good sense, not the negative sense. Where you can tell one thing from another thing. Like IQ tests. I don't know if you've ever taken the time, I did, to, like, when they do an IQ test, what are they doing? What is it that they're examining? And they're examining, there's usually these multiple choice options, and some of them all look alike. And you're supposed to say, which one out of the four is different? And it seems that they deliberately try to make the one that's different look the same, and the one that's the same to look different. Anyway, it's to see to discriminate. What's in a series or a group, and what doesn't fit in that group. That's what intelligence does. And IQ tests do. Your power to discriminate. So that's buddhi. And that's, they can say, an appropriate definition of the Sanskrit term is there's material intelligence, like Prabhupada speaks about. You know, the American Indians, the people that inhabited this country before, it wasn't developed. And then in come the Europeans with their guns. Were taken over. And they developed it. Now there's big cities and roads and stuff. And that takes intelligence. That's the material kind. But that's not the spiritual kind. The spiritual kind is the intelligence that takes you to Krishna. The Dhammi Bodhi Yogam Tam Ninamam Upiyantite. It's when you have to make choices, or when you have to live your life, you always choose the path to Krishna. When you want to always choose the path to Krishna, you show to Krishna that you always want to choose the path to him, because you're engaging in bhakti. Tesham satyata yuktanam bhajatam, priti, purvakam. There's the word bhaj again. Bhaj is the root of bhakti. And bhaj, B-H-A-J, means practical activity. There is sense objects. Here's the senses. Engage the senses with sense objects in practical activity for the pleasure of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. For the pleasure of Krishna. And those who consistently do that, or try to do that, under regulation and under guidance and so forth, then, to such people, tesham, Krishna gives buddhi. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. And what does buddhi do? It takes you to Krishna. Yena mamupiyanti te. That's buddhi. So buddhi is an essential part of bhakti that's properly performed. Bhakti is practical activity. For example, when the pujari is offering arti, now one of the items is with the left hand they ring a bell, with the right hand they make so many circles waving a stick of lit incense. That's a behavior. Consciousness needs to be connected to the behavior. Supposing that consciousness is in the gutter. That's not bhakti. It's the behavior looks like. Or take the example, because the battlefield, Krishna is speaking about killing. And acting through false ego, then consciousness is not right. The classic example, Prabhupada gives it right in the final part of the purport. Here is a soldier. He's acting on behalf of the government, the country. And he is in battle and he does this courageous thing and fights and kills many people. Gets a special honor for that act of courage. Then he comes back home and he kills one person. He's in jail. No, that's state law. When you're doing for the state and you're not doing in some unscrupulous manner. But not under state law, not in the service of the government, not under that authority, criminal. No, someone else might say, whoa, criminal. But using that conventional sense, then if you don't act through false ego, we, you know, take the same principle in terms of anything. You cook. You can cook in false ego. There's one nice devotee, very nice devotee, was saying, I'm having a hard time, really struggling with this understanding of cooking for Krishna. I was surprised to hear her say this. She said, because my whole married life, it's been cooking for my husband and then cooking for my husband and children. And I'm having a hard time cooking for, thinking, consciousness of cooking for Krishna. She said it very simply, but I understood what she was saying. This is the message. Cooking for Krishna means not just you don't use those ingredients, you use only these, and the pot is clean, the kitchen is clean, and you know those, the external things are what they should, you're following the vidhis in the nishetas. But if you're not thinking of Krishna, then the purpose of the vidhis and nishetas is missed. Yes? Because that's the purpose, they're remembering smartavya satatam vishnur vismartavya najato chit sarva vidhi nishedha syur. Etayora vikinkara. So this, they're those vidhis and nishedas, they're kinkaras. They're in the service of this one principle, remember, and don't forget. So supposing you're doing, and you're in false ego. It's not, bhakti isn't a zero or a ten, or a zero or a one. It's not nothing or everything. Bhakti isn't like that. Krishna's not like that. But certainly to pure bhakti, which is what Bhakti is teaching us, we have to overcome this. We have to, two things, not just one thing. Two things. No false ego. It's a purpose. And the other is where intelligence is never entangled. Yes, the translation Prabhupada has used. In the verse, entangled. But in the literal meaning, in the verse is lipyate, attached. So, example, Jambavan. Some of our children know the story. Krishna was looking for the Shyamataka jewel. And Jambavan's child had the Shyamataka jewel because Jambavan killed the lion after the lion killed Prasena and took the jewel. So in Jambavan's cave, Krishna enters and Jambavan's a devotee. He's an exceptional devotee. And he didn't recognize Krishna. Why? He was attached. What was he attached to? He couldn't recognize Krishna because of his attachment for protecting his child. Now protecting a child is natural. What parent isn't going to protect their child? Nothing wrong with that. You should do that. But if the attachment is too much, or too little. Too much or too little, it blocks bhakti, or it's an impediment for bhakti. Perform your duty, but don't be attached. Consciousness is a wonderful topic. It's a wonderful thing to strive for, and we have to know what we're striving for. And we have to strive for it according to how you're supposed to be cultivating Krishna consciousness. There's a nice verse in Krishna's instruction to Uddhava. I think it's chapter 20, canto 11, where Krishna says, a candidate for bhakti is one who is not too much attached and too much detached. Because too much detached, that's an impersonalist. Because you have to deal with actions and emotions. Things that an impersonalist says is maya. Bondage. No emotions. No emotions. So you gotta have emotions. Bhakti is filled with emotions. You gotta have actions. No action. So, too detached, it's a disqualification. Too attached, disqualification. Because intelligence becomes lipyate. Intelligence becomes attached. It gets attached to the material side, which means, the mirror moves and then you can't see. Light's there, but you can't see. Krishna's hand is there, but you can't see. You think you're the doer. You have to do. If Krishna wants to protect, who can harm? So that doesn't mean, oh well, if Krishna wants to protect my child, they'll be okay. If Krishna doesn't want, what can I do? So I won't protect, because Krishna is ultimately the protector. You have to do. But how? In the consciousness of, I am the instrument of Krishna. And the instruments of Krishna make endeavor. It's one of the five factors of action from the previous verse, in this same chapter. You have to make some endeavor. Cheshta. And you can't be too attached. You can't be too detached. One question came up while I was in China. One mother, very nice, trying to be Krishna conscious mother, not understanding Bhagavad Gita properly, saying, you know, right in front of her son, little boy, maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old, something like that. Sometimes, because he was sitting there for 2 hours during class and sitting there and sitting there, you know, interacting with his mother a whole lot, but he was sitting there. So then this little discussion, and she said, you know, sometimes he's very mischievous and I get upset. And when I get upset, it gets him more upset, it gets more mischievous. She didn't say it quite like that, but you know, so maybe I should just be detached. Just like shrug my shoulders. And you can't be too, you're a mother. You can't do that. But you have to know, you know, this is the art of parenting. Good luck. Not easy. Perform your duty without attachment. Do your, whatever it is, your cooking duty or this and that and the other thing, duty. But without attachment. Then Bodhi can operate fully. And the Bodhi that operates fully is Krishna's guiding you how to come to Him. And how to come to Him is connected to bhakti. It's what will be pleasing to Him in this circumstance. Now, the back to the Bhagavad Gita situation, battlefield. It's like really extreme. Kill. And he's got all, in chapter one, all these ethical, virtuous reasons. Sounds pretty, you know, pretty good. You don't read the rest of Bhagavad Gita, you think he's going to walk off the battlefield. Because he's got all good reasons to walk off the battlefield. And in the purport, Prabhupada is saying that hesitation is due to false ego. Now, elsewhere, earlier, many places, the Prabhupada explains the false ego part was, you know, these are my relatives, and if I don't have the kingdom with my relatives, how can I enjoy the kingdom? You know, me, or I'm going to get a big reaction. He gives his reasons. The men will be killed. They don't have protectors for their wives or their daughters. And then unscrupulous men will come along and exploit those women that are not protected, and bad result for society. And I'll be responsible, so I should take the lives of these men on the battlefield. Now that was a little bit more than just I won't be able to enjoy, but it was about himself instead of this using deliberate language, super sanction. Because sanction is there for even the blade of grass. Or sanction is there for the murderer that breaks the law and murders. But then the super sanction is Krishna wants. Now, better be sure that you're, that this is what Krishna wants. How are you going to be sure? Well, only if Krishna gives intelligence, then you'll be sure, buddhi. And if something directly enjoined in scripture or instructed by the spiritual master, that's your checkpoint for verification. But the spiritual master may not be around, and I got to make a decision here, and I don't want to act through false ego. I want to do what Krishna wants. You strive in principle to do what Krishna wants. That's bhakti. Anukulyena Krishnanushilana. You strive to do what Krishna wants, and Krishna will give the intelligence. So in the purport, Prabhupada speaks of one who's guided by super soul. That, you know, the Krishna conscious person. Their movements are according to the movements of super soul. Even if, like in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, he did something bad. He spoke harsh words to a sage that was in meditation, in trance of meditation. He put a dead snake on his neck. Bad. But he did so under the direction of super soul. Why? So Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. And Maharaj Parikshit could go back to Godhead hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Good for the world and good for Maharaj Parikshit. Do this. So we can't imitate and say, well, super soul. You know, I insulted this person, or I something. I hit this person. I killed this person. Super soul. In India, there's more mosquitoes than here. You know, maybe in the forested area or things like that, there's lots of mosquitoes. But in India, mosquitoes is common. And so, many stories in the lives of Prabhupada's disciples who were helping Prabhupada as he was traveling in places where there were lots of mosquitoes, they put up a mosquito net. And then they asked instructions. The mosquitoes that are inside the net, Prabhupada, what should I do? Should I smack them, or, you know, what should I do? And Prabhupada said, if they attack, then you can remove them. You can, you know, that's a mosquito, because it's a law. The aggressor, you can take their life. And the Kauravas were aggressors. By laws of Dharma, they were to be punished with death penalty. What they had done? Etc. Karna. Vali. So, transgression that merits, you know, suitable punishment. So, using, acting with that, even to the degree of killing, the Sanskrit is nahanti. Hatva Eva Saha. Even in killing, Hunti, he doesn't kill. False ego and, or no false ego and buddhi, spiritual intelligence. No false ego and spiritual intelligence. No bondage. Karma-free life. Even when there's things that are otherwise unethical not to be done. It's a philosophical understanding. It's not to be whimsically imitated. But it's to be properly cultivated in not just extreme acts of violence or minor acts of violence like taking the lives of mosquitoes, or Varsana Maharaj told me this, in New Vrindavan they had Prabhupada wanted very much for there to be the self-sufficiency model. In the hills of West Virginia, self-sufficiency, whew. Having cows, you have to have two legs that are two different size. Because the hill is so steep. So, but they told Prabhupada it's very difficult. As soon as we plant something, when it comes harvest time, the deer have a sense when it's harvest time and they come and eat everything. Can we, kill them? The Prabhupada said, no. Build a fence. But they jump over the fence. Then Prabhupada said, build a 12-foot fence. But don't kill them. Don't harm them. And they'll find something else to eat during harvest time. You're not taking their life by depriving them. Prabhupada told the story that his father, by profession, was a grain merchant. So one of the things that his father did was, in the place where they kept the grains, over there would be a bowl where there was some water and some grains. And the rodents and the creatures that like to come and eat through the bag and eat what's in the bag, they got trained up. They go over there to where the water is, have some nice music, have a party over there and, have their meal over there. And then they wouldn't disturb the bag because they had their necessities. So, nonviolence. Nonviolence is the message of Bhagavad Gita, and violence when it's called for by the codes of Dharma. That's nonviolence too. The real standard of nonviolence. Otherwise, you don't have bhakti. Because with bhakti, the senses and emotion are required. And if you say, no, can't have emotion. If you're impersonalist, those who follow Shankara's teachings say, if you want to make spiritual progress, give up your family. If you don't give up your family, you won't make spiritual progress. That's not what bhakti says. That's not what Krishna says to Arjuna. That's not the message of Bhagavad Gita. But that's what impersonalists say. Too much detachment. Now, there's facility. And there's heightened attachment that comes with reducing and simplifying life. And at some stage, taking up vanaprastha life. Not a whole lot of models out there in the world, not even in the ISKCON world, but there's some. And detachment is a principle. but not too much. And the appropriate attachment, detachment is where attachment to Krishna increases. And as attachment to Krishna increases, then sannyas life. Some of you, well, Chakri was certainly here in Devyananda when Badrinarayan was involved here in St. Louis. And, you know, he was a householder. He had two children. The children grew up, finished their education, got their careers. Daughter in particular, super successful career lady, got married, settled down, and he took sannyas. In his exemplary sannyasi. And now just this year, I think at Janmashtami time, Madhu Sevita from Italy, GBC in Italy and BBT trustee in Mediterranean area, taking sannyas. His wife is cared for, she has her needs, and the son is there to look after his mother and everything, and going to take sannyas. Very exemplary step. So it's encouraged, move in that direction, but not artificially or without the attachment to Krishna part. And the attachment to Krishna part is to be cultivated in the course of one's living one's life in the world without too much attachment, without too much detachment. Too much detachment meaning artificial, impersonal. And so it's a strong argument, two things, summary. Strong argument to Arjuna, your idea of not fighting, born a false ego, Arjuna. And your argument that says, I'll be responsible for killing, born a false ego, Arjuna. Those who act in false ego, they are, yes, they're responsible for their actions and it's sinful and punishable by law and by God. But one who acts according to the super sanction of super soul and Krishna directly, it's false ego to say otherwise. That's one of the messages. False ego and buddhi. Buddhi is, it guides the mind, it guides the intelligence when in proper order. It gives direction to the mind, which gives direction to the senses, which then interact with matter in the appropriate way. That's when things are in proper order. So when one's intelligence is not too much attached or entangled in affairs of attachment, then buddhi remains strong. And one can see clearly what to do, even in troubling circumstances, perplexing circumstances. Krishna will give that intelligence, what to do. And it doesn't necessarily lead to, now I feel more comfortable. My comforts of life have gotten nicer. That doesn't necessarily mean that. It may mean that. It may mean that for some period of time there's some restriction. That's what it may mean that. But the opportunity to please Krishna isn't restricted by the circumstance. And then when Krishna provides abundance instead of restriction, it doesn't go to your head. Oh, now is the opportunity to be the enjoyer, to see success in my spiritual life. Now I can be an enjoyer of that. No. That's again, and read still, for the pleasure of Krishna only. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita is expanded in principle in Bhagavatam and many, many historical references to great devotees who lived like that. With service to Krishna, without false ego, with intelligence is not overly attached. Any discussion?
Guru Maharaj, I have a question about the word responsibility used in this purport. Prabhupada says, personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness.
Yeah, so responsibility arising from false ego. That's the, connect those two. That's the context.
As we are trying to please Krishna, we know that there is false ego acting alongside our desire to please Krishna. So we want to take we should take responsibility for our actions, for our words, our lack of purity. So I'm wondering, how is that responsibility different or distinct from that from the responsibility being spoken about here?
So Krishna conscious responsibility and false ego responsibility. You want to know the distinction? Yes? Well, simply that Krishna should be pleased is the distinction. And the degree that that's the focus, that's Krishna conscious responsibility. And the other is the other kind, false ego kind. I could give examples, but that's the principle. Living a life of responsibility is good. It's something we should do. It's not discouraged. It's encouraged. People that are irresponsible, that's discouraged. Be responsible. And be Krishna conscious responsible. Krishna should be pleased. Do things in that way. That's responsibility. And so the other is like just adharma, or tamagun, motive ignorance in, you know, irresponsible life, just not taking care of anything, neglecting health, neglecting others, neglecting, just becoming, you know, deeper and deeper into the mode of darkness. Be responsible. That, so then there's, that commonly will mean false ego responsibility. Krishna conscious responsibility is not just, you know, a notch higher. It's the difference between darkness and light. It's really the difference. What's pleasing to Krishna? Living one's life that way. Something else. Bob, you have something? No? Okay. No. Unheard of. Go ahead.
Maybe my question might be repeated, but I'm not sure. You said, Maharaj, emotions while practicing bhakti, you know, the emotions should be used and it comes automatically. So
to be used in Krishna service.
So because of the emotions, we get attachment comes.
No, the emotion is Krishna should be pleased. You get attached to Krishna, not to the object that you have some emotion about.
Because I don't know the boundary line
of that.
Well, that's because buddhi is not so strong. Mm. That's the discrimination factor. Because it's, you know, be honest, like the rest of us, there's a mix. There's the please Krishna part and there's the false ego. I'm the controller part. I'm the controller, enjoyer, and the best friend. But that's Krishna's position. But so to some degree there's both. And that's where the boundary is not so clear.
Hmm.
We have to chant better and pray better and purify ourselves better. And then specifically, remember from the Festival of the Holy Name, the very first class was be the servant of the name. Remember that? I remember it. And that will help you get the right focus. It'll help you put Krishna at the center. And all those things that there's some emotion connected to with this mix. And the line isn't clear. Start with the name. Because those services, whatever they are, I can take a guess, some of them at least, and they're services that arise, that the devotional aspect arises from the name. Bhakti, for us, bhakti becomes reawakened. Our relationship, our forgotten relationship with Krishna becomes reawakened through primarily the name, the sound.
Hmm.
Servant of the name, and then servant of situation X and Y and Z. Servant of the name, servant of Krishna. It's a nice exercise. It frees us from illusion and takes us to Krishna. It's a nice exercise. Just like a child learning how to function in the world. Parents want to teach children how to do that.
Mm.
And spiritual master and Krishna want to teach you how to behave in the spiritual world, how to enter the mature stage in the spiritual world. It's a nice education and training exercise. Lovely. We make mistakes, but it's a lovely exercise.
Sure, Maharaj. I'll try. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Yes.
Couple more questions, Kumaranji, if you have time. Listed in the five factors of action are the body and the senses separately. Now, the
place of action and the instruments.
Translated into the body and the senses, is that correct?
Well, the place of action can be
text 14.
The place of action, brackets, the body.
So the instruments of action are the senses, and through the senses, the soul acts in various ways, Prabhupada says in the purport.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the body and the senses are listed separately as two separate factors of action when it seems without the senses, the body cannot act.
That's right. Without the body, the senses can't act.
So
the senses, in this sense, doesn't mean like your eyeball. It's the power of sight. That's the indriya. Because you can replace the eyeball with another one, by another body part. Or, you know, an amputated leg could be put on a prosthesis and, you know, off you go. It's the power of locomotion, the power of sight. And then there's, you know, literally the, you know, body part. Through which the power of seeing, the power of smelling, power of hearing works. And if the body part's broken, can't hear. Well, get another body part. Put another alternator in the machine. So, like, with, you know, withdrawing the senses, in the Ashtanga Yoga system, Pratyahara. It's not like, you know, the limbs get withdrawn in the body. It's withdrawing the power directed outwardly, inwardly. And Bhishma Dev did. He stopped action because his consciousness was in serving everybody. It's in that case serving Yudhisthira. Instructions how to be a qualified king. But he knew the Pratyahara and the, up to the Samadhi. He knew. And he did. Parents recognize which scream is their child. Yes. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah.
I can talk about myself that my intelligence is entangled, and I'm thinking that do even bhakti yoga, because of intelligence is so much entangled, there is putting consciousness and doing activities, I find so many obstacles through intelligence. So it seems like 22 cash, you know, cash 22, then...
Well, the obstacles are, in one sense, they're already there, and they're always going to be there. They were there yesterday, they're there today, and they're there tomorrow. But how we read them, how we perceive them, is a bhakti factor. You know, the stronger and the weaker. Now, maybe somebody wishes to have less obstacles. So I'll just, like, keep to myself. I'll just live to myself. Inwardly. But that doesn't take care of, you know, the impurities of heart in and of itself, because I can be alone, and, you know, how I'm going to read being alone. And, you know, I'm being alone because I want to avoid all those obstacles out there. You know, it's definition by negation. It's impersonal. That doesn't bring about purification. So now we may have to titrate a little bit. We have to measure small quantum amounts. How much, how little, each of us need to find that balance for ourselves. And sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. But that doesn't, either one or the other doesn't take care of the obstacle part, because the obstacle is really within. Yeah, the obstacle is an obstacle of consciousness. Specifically, how much do we want to please Krishna? Specifically. As opposed to how much am I at the center, and it's all about I'm at the center. Different flavors, of that. 86 different flavors of ice cream. What's your favorite? So we each have our favorite. But the principle is Krishna the center? And we have to be realistic about our own capacity to address obstacles. But if it's in this, I need my space, my private, I need more privacy, then we have to address the contaminations in a inappropriate manner, and to some degree some extending is needed, so that my senses will also become purified. Read very carefully 647 purport and a Bhagavad Gita, and the senses become purified through that practical activity, because it's practical activity. Bhakti is practical activity. There's, you know, stuff out there. There's the consciousness inside that's not pure, and there's stuff out there. The problem is not the stuff out there. The problem is how we read the stuff out there. And if it's, you know, if it's me-centered reading, then it says, you know, obstacle everywhere. So I want to run away. I want to withdraw from the obstacle path. But you know, there's still the, you know, consciousness inside that's rattling around. So we need that. Bhakti requires practical activity. And we need to, each of us, according to our nature, engage in an appropriate manner. Not too much, not too little, not too much attached, not too detached, with the aim of pleasing Krishna. It's that aim of pleasing Krishna that's the operative principle. That's the swarup lakshana of bhakti. Primary characteristic of bhakti, Krishna is to be pleased by my emotion, by my activity, by my everything. Hadi, hadi. Gotta be with a friend. Anything else? Yes.
The principle of not too much attachment and not too much detachment, it seems that that is applicable for sadhakas and not really applicable in pure stages of devotion.
Not applicable for?
It's not a principle in the higher stages of devotion.
Okay.
Because we...
well, it's a principle that doesn't disappear, but it's not so pertinent to that person because their consciousness is so elevated. They're already not too much or too little. Too much on either side.
So when we see examples of, you know, these elevated devotees that are too detached, for example, Jara Bharat, there's Gaurakishor Das Babaji, there's Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who's on the other end of the spectrum, we can understand that, you know, their consciousness is completely fixed and...
Yeah.
They look like they're too attached or they're too detached,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, we can't judge a book by its cover. Is that your point? Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.